From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point. Here's how Ambassador Nikki Haley defined success in her 2 years as the U.S. representative to the United Nations.
Now the United States is respected. Countries may not like what we do, but they respect what we do. They know that if we say we're going to do something, we follow it through.
Well, Haley said that when she made the surprise announcement yesterday that she'll step down at the end of the year. She ends her time at the UN as one of the few women in President Trump's cabinet and one of the few of any gender who's come through both unscathed and even more popular than when she went in. Quite a feat for the former South Carolina governor who was once a leading never Trump voice. So how did she balance being America's chief global ambassador while serving an administration that disdains global alliances? This hour On Point, assessing Nikki Haley's time at the UN and what's next for American foreign policy. And you can join us. How do you think Ambassador Haley represented the U.S. at the UN? On the Iran deal? On North Korea? What about the U.S. withdrawal from the Human Rights Council or her criticism of Russia? Do you think, as Haley says, that the world respects the U.S. more now or less? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. And we're going to start today from Washington with Eliana Johnson. She's White House reporter for Politico, and we've got a link to her latest story, which is titled Nikki Haley Flips the Script on Trump. That link is at onpointradio.org. Eliana, welcome to the show.
Hi, Meghna. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you back. Also with us today from New York is Colm Lynch. He's Foreign Policy's UN-based senior diplomatic reporter. His latest story is Nikki Haley Stuns Washington by Announcing Resignation from UN Post. And of course, that is at onpointradio.org, that link. Colm, welcome back to you as well.
Hi, thanks for having me, Meghna.
Okay, so Eliana, let me just start with you. I'm actually going to play a little bit of tape here from what the president said at the press conference when Nikki Haley made her resignation public. And he was extraordinary, laudatory. He said at the very, very least, she has improved the position of UN ambassador.
She's helped make it a much better position, if you want to know the truth. I think it's become maybe a more glamorous position than it was 2 years ago. Maybe I wonder why, but it is. She's made it a very glamorous position. She's made it a more important position. So we have, I can almost say, many people that want to do it, and they're very good people.
So, Eliana, help us read this. I mean, the president's reaction to this resignation is quite different than virtually all the other members of his cabinet who've left in the past couple of years. How do we read the president's mood right now?
Well, the president's reaction was so interesting because he's let previous cabinet secretaries dangle by a thread, and speculation has swirled about when he would fire them. That happened with Rex Tillerson. It happened with National Security Advisor H.R. McMaster. Happened with his Veterans Affairs Secretary, David Shulkin. It's happening with John Kelly, who is his chief of staff right now, with all this speculation about when they'll leave. And Nikki Haley, in the headline of my piece was she flipped the script on him by colluding with him. About allowing him to control the news cycle, surprising everybody about her resignation. Trump knew about it, he said, as far as 6 months ago, but he kept the secret. And as to his comments about it being a more glamorous position, that was in part Nikki Haley, but it was also in part, I think, Rex Tillerson not fully embracing the full profile of a Secretary of State, and it allowed her to make the UN ambassador a bigger position. That stopped when Mike Pompeo became Secretary of State, but certainly for the first year or so of the Trump administration, the UN ambassadorship was an outsized position, and Nikki Haley took full advantage of that to her own benefit.
Yeah. So, Colm Lynch, I mean, it seems as if Nikki Haley has achieved a rare feat in Donald Trump's Washington, because, you know, as we heard just now, the president really celebrating her service in his administration. And at the same time, her own popularity numbers, I'm seeing at least, you know, one poll at more than 63% approval rating, you know, across Americans, regardless of party here. I mean, that's a rare feat. How did she accomplish that?
Well, I mean, I don't know, but I mean, I presume that the president probably fears that she could be a potential rival for 2020. I mean, she said yesterday that she had no intention of running against him, that she would support his candidacy, but, you know, a lot can change in 2 years. And so, I mean, I think it was probably a recognition of her stature and her popularity, and that, you know, it was somebody that he would want to have on his team.
Mm. Well, let's just actually play that moment that you just referred to, Colm, because there was, at least in the first several hours, lots of speculation that maybe she's stepping down now because 2020 is on the horizon. And here's what she said.
Thank you, Mr. President.
You,
it's been an honor of a lifetime. And I will say this, for all of you that are going to ask about 2020, no, I'm not running for 2020. I can promise you what I'll be doing is campaigning for this one. So I look forward to supporting the president in the next election.
That's so good.
That's President Trump at the end there saying that's so good. So Eliana Johnson, Nikki Haley saying, nope, she's not going to run in 2020, but there's always 2024. And perhaps now's the time for her to step away from the UN because, you know, she can make some money, build political or capitalize on the political credibility that she has that might set her up very well for 2024.
I think that's exactly right. Two quick comments here, Meghna. She reassured the president she wouldn't be challenging him in 2020. And I think she was honest when she said that. But bowing out now and not being a part of the cabinet ahead of the 2020 campaign does mean she won't have to be a high profile surrogate for the president ahead of 2020, as she would be if she were representing the administration on TV very close to that campaign. And Nikki Haley has really jealously protected her reputation and her political brand in the administration. She's one of the few members of the administration whose reputation and independence hasn't been swallowed up by the Trump brand. And so I think she is emerging from the Trump administration relatively unscathed and is unique in that regard. Mm.
So, Colm, I mean, reflect on that with us, because is that how she was seen at the UN? I mean, she was America's primary voice for the president's America First political philosophy. But at the UN, did she somehow avoid being herself defined by that?
Well, there's really two Nikki Haleys. There's the Nikki Haley of 2017, 2018. So in the first year, I think she really surprised everybody at the UN in the sense that she really tried to sort of establish a completely independent brand, a completely different identity from the president. I mean, among her first kind of discussions before the Security Council, she railed against Russia, said that, you know, Vladimir Putin was not the sort of person that the Americans could really count on or could work with. All of this in stark contrast to what the president had been saying. I think I remember talking to a lot of the European ambassadors at the time, and they felt that in some ways she really wasn't that different in terms of her foreign policy vision than sort of establishment Republicans, and they appreciated that. They found her somewhat pragmatic, more so than other members of the cabinet. And so I think there was quite warm feelings. I think that changed. She tacked to the right in the second term, particularly on Iran, on Israel-Palestine. I mean, she started out as someone who, you know, was visiting Palestinian refugee camps in the Middle East, one sort of administered by the UN, and defended this organization in the face of criticism from conservatives in Washington. And yet, by the time that, you know, the Americans got into a fight with the rest of the world over moving the U.S. embassy to Jerusalem, she really shifted. She became isolated at the UN on the Israel-Palestine issue, and she became quite aggressive in trying to cut off any kind of humanitarian assistance to Palestinian refugees, and became very kind of hardline on that position, really embraced the president's hardline on Iran, opposed to the Iran nuclear deal. So, I mean, I think she was seen as someone who was now moving towards positioning herself as a potential presidential candidate.
I see. I mean, and also we're heading into a time where there are major foreign policy challenges, not just on the horizon, but front and center. I mean, you mentioned Iran, ongoing tensions with Iran, and the administration seems to be very actively ratcheting up those tensions. There's, of course, potential confrontations with China and the endless issue with Russia. I mean, these are significant foreign policy challenges. Is it possible that Nikki Haley just didn't see herself as being as effective on those in these next 2 years as she might have been in especially that first year?
Well, I mean, my sense is that she's always, I mean, you know, my sort of suspicions from the very beginning in the sense of her sort of forming her own kind of foreign policy identity was that at some point she was just biding her time until she broke with the administration and, you know, would be there in the event that Trumpism sort of went into decline, and that she would be there ready to sort of deliver the Republican Party out of the wilderness. So my sense was that I always thought that she would leave. I thought it would be after the midterms, or I thought it might be after the Robert Mueller investigation. But, you know, as Eliana was saying, she's been very careful about sort of preserving her own reputation.
Yeah.
And I always saw that as something like thinking ahead of, you know, whether this, you know, whether this whole kind of movement collapses.
Right. Well, I want to play one more clip from her press conference yesterday. This is Nikki Haley speaking about her as right now deep appreciation she has, particularly for Jared Kushner and Ivanka Trump.
I can't say enough good things about Jared and Ivanka. Jared is such a hidden genius that no one understands. I mean, to redo the NAFTA deal the way he did, what I've done working with him on the Middle East peace plan, it is so unbelievably well done. And Ivanka's been just a great friend, and they do a lot of things behind the scenes that I wish more people knew about, because we're a better country because they're in this administration.
Eliana Johnson, we just got a minute to go before the break here, but if Nikki Haley is going to break with the Trump administration, it's not now. I mean, that's unquestioning fealty she just expressed for Jared Kushner and Ivanka Trump.
Nikki Haley has broken with the administration, and she may break with the administration, but she is unlikely to break with the president personally or with his family. If she campaigns for president in 2024, she will be campaigning in the party of Trump, and she will, I guarantee you, be using the clips of that 30 minutes of praise the president delivered to her yesterday in that news conference.
All right, well, we are talking about Nikki Haley, Ambassador Nikki Haley, and her tenure as 2 years as a UN ambassador for the United States. What's next for her, and what's next for U.S. foreign policy when we do get a new United Nations ambassador? I'm speaking today with Eliana Johnson and Colm Lynch, and we'll be right back. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/onpoint. That's Indeed.com/onpoint. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This episode is brought to you by ShipStation. If you run an e-commerce business, you know how much work it takes to produce something great while dealing with complicated shipping issues. That's why over 130,000 companies have turned to ShipStation, an innovative tool that allows you to focus less on shipping and more on building your brand. With ShipStation, you can manage orders, label printing, reporting, and customer service on one easy-to-use dashboard. You'll reduce warehouse costs with reliable enterprise solutions and save thousands on shipping costs with discounts up to 89% off. Plus, you can effortlessly import orders from everywhere you sell online. So, turn your shipping challenges into opportunities for growth. Go to ShipStation.com and use code POD to sign up for your free 60-day trial. That's ShipStation.com. Code POD.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking about UN Ambassador Nikki Haley and about her decision to step down at the end of this year. We're assessing her time at the UN, and we're going to talk about very specific issues that she led on and spoke out on here in just a minute. But I'm joined today by Eliana Johnson, White House reporter for Politico, and by Colm Lynch, UN-based senior diplomatic reporter at Foreign Policy. And I just want to play a little bit of sound here to get a sense about what Nikki Haley feels are her successes at the UN. This is actually at a press conference in late September, where she said that under President Donald Trump, the U.S. engages in multilateralism only on U.S. terms.
Since the Secretary General's meeting last year, we have pulled out of the Paris Accord. We've pulled out of the Global Compact. We have pulled out of the Iran deal. All of that is to say that the United States is determined to obviously be involved in multilateral organizations where we see it, but not in the way that they're mandated on what the United States does or that infringes on the American people.
So Ambassador Nikki Haley there talking about an expression of U.S. power in terms of its retraction from several multilateral agreements. The United Nations President Antonio Guterres, his spokesperson, delivered this message about Ambassador Haley's work at the U.N. on Guterres' behalf. This is in response to her decision to step down.
They had a very productive and strong working relationship during her tenure as United States Permanent Representative. They worked hard to promote constructive ties between the United Nations and the United States, showing the value of the United Nations. The Secretary General looks forward to continuing to work with Ambassador Haley until the end of her tenure and, of course, with her replacement.
All right. Well, joining us now is Admiral James Stavridis. He's former Supreme Allied Commander of NATO. He served in that position from 2009 to 2013. Dean Emeritus at the Fletcher School of Law and Diplomacy at Tufts University. And he's an operating executive now at the Carlyle Group and author of The Leader's Bookshelf. James Stavridis, welcome back to On Point.
Great to be back with you, Magnus. How's it going?
It's going very well. Lots to talk about here. I want to just get your sense about the two different cuts we just heard. Ambassador Haley saying she defines her successes at the UN in part by expressing American power by withdrawing from certain agreements, but of course in the diplomatic language of the United Nations itself saying that there was a very strong and productive relationship there. What's your take?
I find those statements at variance. I do want to start by just giving her credit as a person. I think, as many have said, she maintained her independence. She struck out on a number of issues in very positive ways, and I think she was a very capable ambassador for the United States. However, I think that again and again this administration has demonstrated I don't think contempt is too strong a word for the United Nations and the organs of diplomacy that surround it in the international constellation. So she will have to answer for that as part of her legacy. And I think it's a little disingenuous to say that we're very engaged while we're withdrawing from treaties and denigrating international organizations.
Okay, well, so tell me more about that. I mean, if she'll have to answer for that, there were specific moments where she was, you know, extremely forthright in terms of amplifying the language of the Trump administration at the UN. What are some of those moments that you think are particularly worth paying attention to?
I'd start with the on the negative side, the withdrawal from the climate agreement.
Right.
I think that will go down in history as a significant misstep by the administration, kind of a piece with pulling out of the Trans-Pacific Partnership, although, of course, that's not part of her particular remit. On the positive side, I think she was extremely forceful on Syrian violations of international law after use of chemical weapons, on calling out Russia on its assassination of an ex-KGB agent.
So more forcefully than the president has ever done.
Absolutely. And I think that in every sense, her departure is a win for Russia, unfortunately, because we lose a voice who has been consistently unafraid to call out the Russians in general and Vladimir Putin in particular.
So Colm Lynch, respond to that. I mean, this is one question that I've had in the past 24 hours, is that is the job of U.S. ambassador to the U.N. within this administration itself, specifically within the Trump administration, one of the most challenging jobs there is in the administration because of exactly what Admiral Stavridis has said there, that you know, you're working for a president who just basically doesn't believe in some functions of the U.N. and how do you come through that?
I think the president's kind of view on it shifts all the time. And I think that Haley did a very good job of trying to sort of, you know, tamp down his most sort of anti-UN, you know, destructive kind of tendencies and was able to kind of bring him along, explain to him what the UN was doing, trying to bring Jared and Ivanka on board to sort of recognize the benefits of working, you know, through the multilateral system. But, you know, she is very much in, you know, her remarks that you just played, very much embracing the White House America First sort of doctrine. She has been, you know, she has been a kind of lead agent in the administration to push for an end to foreign aid for countries that are not, you know, close friends of the United States, and she has been, you know, very, very tough on a number of other issues. I mean, I think at the UN, she does have a lot of achievements that she can point to. She did an able job in leading the negotiations on expanding sanctions against North Korea. She's been quite active on some African issues that others in the administration have shown very little interest in, Central African Republic, the South Sudan, other sort of humanitarian issues. But it's been sort of and sometimes hard to see, you know, in one sense, she has sort of embraced this kind of brand of being kind of a humanitarian actor and a sort of promoter of human rights within the administration. But then that sort of conflicts with her kind of positions on, you know, dealing, for instance, with the Palestinians, where she's been quite quite harsh in the way that she's dealt with that issue.
Yeah. Eliana Johnson, I know we've got to let you go here in a minute, but I just wanted to get your take on something that James DeVries said, that that there are some things that Nikki Haley, that Ambassador Haley said and actions that she took or positions that she championed at the UN that may come back to haunt her if, you know, in her future political career, because she, you know, was aligned so closely with the president. You know, whether that's 2 years or 4 years from now, I know that's forever in American politics, but that's a reality, though, that she's got to be wondering about.
Listening both to Admiral Stavridis talk and to Colm Topp, I think Nikki Haley did this job with an eye to a future presidential campaign, and she will be touting her accomplishments and everything she did at the UN, running on the conservative things such as moving the U.S. Capitol, championing the move of the U.S. embassy to Jerusalem, things that the Trump administration was excoriated for, pulling out of that climate deal. Those are things she can run on in a Republican primary and things that she will have to defend in a general election. Absolutely.
Well, Eliana Johnson, White House reporter for Politico, joining us from Washington. Thank you so much, Eliana. It was great to have you.
Thank you.
All right, let's get some calls in here. Let's go to Frida, who's calling from Tucson, Arizona. Frida, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you. So I'm an independent voter, have been for decades, and I'm an objectivist. I do both vote in both parties. And I don't think that Nikki Haley came out of this unscathed. I think her positions on Paris, Jerusalem, and pulling out of the Iran nuclear deal are all major fumbles on her part. I realize that those were positions of the president she is representing, but those are not successes. And I definitely see us as a country having fallen greatly down a scale of respect around the world. I think supporting an apartheid state in Israel is going to go down in history as a major flaw to what she thinks are her successes. I would love to have seen her really stand up to the president, but I don't think she would have maintained her position. And I do think she's just pandering to whatever her next political goal is.
Frida, thank you so much for your call. James DeVries, let me turn back to you here, because you heard, you know, Frida there, especially talking about Nikki Haley's very hard line on U.S. support for Israel there. Your response to her?
I agree with her view that Nikki Haley, as I said, will have to answer for some of these positions. And I think Frida correctly calls up several of them, as well as the one that I mentioned, which really stands out for me, is the Paris Accord. But I agree with her on the other two issues as well. And as always, an ambassador is required to represent the position of the president. That's for whom she works directly. She is a cabinet-level official. However, when she hits a position where her conscience doesn't agree with it, then she's required to either step back, resign, or move out. So I think that, as Frida says, she'll have to answer for the position she took. But on the other hand, I don't think we should lose sight of the fact that she took some very strong and positive positions that I think will be in her credit. So like every official who's been in these jobs, and these are difficult, exhausting positions, having held a couple of them on the military side, you come away with a mixed record. But I suspect her timing is smart. She's getting out at a logical moment. And I think the more interesting question, frankly, at this point is in the immediate future is who's going to replace her and what will that say about foreign policy.
Well, Colm Lynch, do we have any insights on names or who that person might be?
Yeah, there are a couple of names floating around. The president has said that he'd be looking at Dina Powell, who was a senior official in the National Security Council. Up until recently, she had previously been considered a candidate both for that position but also the top U.S. political position within the U.N. sort of hierarchy, and she turned that down apparently. So she's in play. There's been some discussion of Rick Grenell as the U.S. ambassador to Germany right now, very much a Trump loyalist, very close to John Bolton. They had both served together in New York at the UN years ago. He would be someone who I think would be more inclined to stay much more closely to the White House line than I think. I think Haley acted more as a filter, and I don't see Rick really playing that kind of role, sort of balancing role. And so those are two of the candidates that kind of had been played. There could be some others.
I agree with those two. Let me add two other names that I've heard that I think are both interesting in the context of, as Colm says, what do we learn about where foreign policy is going? One is Kay Bailey Hutchison, who's our current ambassador to NATO and is, I would say, more out of the moderate Dina Powell, Ivanka, Jared side of things, former senator from Texas. Another name more aligned very strongly with John Bolton is the current deputy national security advisor, Mira Ricardel. So in addition to the two that Colm threw out, I think those two are on the table.
Right.
I do think he will push to put a woman in that position to try and play off and against the debacle of last week with Justice Kavanaugh's confirmation.
James Stavridis and Colm Lynch, on the note that you were just talking about who might replace Ambassador Haley, we've got comments coming in on our website. Someone named Creaker says, the only thing I worry about is if Haley is resigning because Trump was sending her in directions even she wasn't willing to go, but her upcoming replacement would be. I mean, Colm Lynch, some of the names that you and James Stavridis just talked about are much more closely aligned with the president's worldview and as you said, wouldn't act so much as a filter, as a direct conduit. Is that of concern to other diplomats at the UN?
Well, I mean, you could probably find some of these candidates which would not be, you know, kind of in the mold of John Bolton, of the ones that we mentioned. But I would think that, I would think that I mean, talking to diplomats at the UN, they have been very much they were sort of very concerned before Haley came in, and they thought that there would be a real fire breather, someone along the lines of Bolton coming to New York, and they were relieved that she was there. She has left the U.S., you know, isolated on a number of issues, important issues. You mentioned Paris, Jerusalem, Iran. Those have not been popular positions, but her colleagues still like her. They still feel like they can work with her and that she's not out to bring the building down. So I think that there's a lot of anxiety about what might come and who he might pick.
Well, James Stavridis, let's look more broadly across American foreign policy and the power structure there, because, of course, we have the president. We have Secretary of State Mike Pompeo now at the State Department. If in the case, and we're hypothesizing now, though, in the case that the president does name someone to the UN ambassador's post, who is very much in line with his worldview on America first and his view on the means by which to express American power abroad. Is that concerning to you?
It is. It is to me very much. As I have said many, many times, and I think it's mainstream thought on foreign policy, the greatest asset the United States has, full stop, is our network of alliances, partners, and friends around the world. Our geopolitical opponents, China, Russia, for example, do not remotely have that kind of network. And we weaken that network at, in my view, great peril to ourselves. And I'm going to put at the top, as a former Supreme Allied Commander, the NATO relationship, the transatlantic relationship between the United States and Europe, which represents over half the world's GDP amongst 28 nations going back and forth. We weaken that when we denigrate NATO. I think you can make the same arguments about the United Nations, which can be annoying and frustrating at times, but in the grand sweep of what happens in the world, is a force for good, in my view.
Mm.
So it does concern me, because too often this idea of America first tends to move us, Magna, toward America alone, and that is not a place we want to be.
Colm, we've got a minute before the break here. Just wondering if you wanted to respond to that.
No, I mean, I agree that there's real concern about that. I mean, we already are in a much more isolated position on a lot of key issues, and there seems to be a kind of tendency in this administration to vent its kind of anger and frustrations at allies than at, you know, powerful potential rivals, Russia, China. They've been mixing it up recently, but it just seems to be this kind of unnecessary kind of, you know, battle among, you know, people who should be friendly and should be allied on issues. So I kind of agree with it.
Well, we are talking about Ambassador Nikki Haley's tenure at the United Nations and what might be next for U.S. foreign policy and U.S. representation at the U.N. now that Ambassador Haley has announced she'll step down at the end of the year. You're hearing Colm Lynch. He's U.N.-based senior diplomatic reporter for Foreign Policy magazine, and Admiral James Stavridis, former Supreme Allied Commander at NATO and now an operating executive at the Carlyle Group. We'll get to a lot more callers when we get back. What's your assessment of how Ambassador Haley did at her 2 years in the United Nations? And what do you want next for U.S. representation there? And what do you think is coming up next for her? I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Scene. Listen and follow Last Scene wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking about UN Ambassador Nikki Haley's decision to step down from that post at the end of the year, what her legacy and her track record is at her 2 years representing the United States in the UN, and what could be next for the next UN ambassador and for American foreign policy as a whole. And we're joined today by Admiral James Stavridis. He's a former Supreme Allied Commander at NATO, and he's now an operating executive at the Carlyle Group and author of The Leader's Bookshelf. Colm Lynch is also with us. He's UN-based senior diplomatic reporter at Foreign Policy magazine. And gentlemen, we've got a lot of callers who want to join us, so let me just get some of them in here. So let's go to Vivian, who's calling from East Vassalboro, Maine. You're on the air, Vivian.
Okay, thank you for taking my call. I am an independent voter, and I don't belong to either party, but I would like to say that I was so pleasantly surprised by Nikki Haley's attitudes that she took as a representative to the UN. She stood up to a lot of the hypocrisy that was shown by the human rights organizations, and she stood up to a lot of the hypocrisy that characterized Israel as a right-wing country. And you know, I think it's interesting that Colm Lynch mentioned that she went to the Palestinian camps. She went to visit the Palestinian areas. And maybe what happened was that she saw that they really weren't so bad off. And that's maybe why she decided to support Israel and a move to Jerusalem.
Well, Vivian, let me let Colm respond to your questioner. And thank you so much for your call. Colm, what do you say?
I think that characterization isn't true, because, I mean, she went to this refugee camp, and she came back very moved by the experience, and came to, you know, testified before Congress and made an impassionate personal sort of appeal for them that this these programs really did make life better for them, that the alternative would not necessarily be good for U.S. interest, that you would might the withdrawal of aid might sort of contribute to promoting the most sort of extremist tendencies in the region. So I think she was very much moved by that visit. What really I think changed her view on this was really the dispute over the U.S. moving the embassy, the U.S. embassy to Jerusalem. There was a Security Council vote in which she was, you know, cast the veto against 14 other members. She was totally isolated. The U.S. was isolated in the U.N. General Assembly afterwards. And I think it was after that, this sort of notion that the Palestinians were defying the United States, that they were rallying international opinion against the United States, had really kind of shifted her kind of orientation.
Right.
She became very tough on that issue. So I don't think it was about that experience.
Well, James DeVries, I want to come to you and hear your thoughts about this. But just let me, I want to play a little bit of tape here to offer some context. This first, because the Ambassador Haley has spoken very forcefully about U.S. support and the Trump administration's support for Israel. So first of all, this is from March 2018, so just a little earlier this year. And Ambassador Haley was speaking at the annual American-Israel Public Affairs Committee conference in Washington, received multiple standing ovations throughout the evening, and here's one such moment.
It cannot be the case that in an organization with 193 countries, the United Nations spends half of its time attacking only one country. We will not accept it any longer.
So that was in March of this year. And then to Colm Lynch's point about the UN's response to the United States deciding to move its embassy to Jerusalem. Last December, the UN scheduled a vote on a resolution denouncing that move. And Ambassador Haley at that time tweeted, quote, that the U.S. will be taking names of those who vote against the United States. That got some pretty extreme reaction. Here's former U.S. Ambassador to NATO Nicholas Burns on CNN really criticizing Haley for that.
This is extremely ill-advised by the Trump administration, by the president and Ambassador Haley. I'm kind of surprised that Ambassador Haley's doing this. I don't know if she's been ordered to do this, but it's not going to be effective. You know, we're a great country. We're the leading, strongest country in the world, and our best presidents, our most effective presidents, they led with self-confidence. And they led with supporting our allies. There are thousands of votes in the United Nations General Assembly and the Security Council. You win some, you lose some. You can't bully your best friends in the world.
That's Nicholas Burns, former U.S. ambassador to NATO last December. James DeVries, how do you respond to that?
I agree with Nick Burns. And I've worked with Nick on multiple occasions, including during the NATO years. He's got a pretty keen view of all this. Now, having said that, I think that the UN has, over the years, gone way over the top in beating up on Israel. And Israel is our strongest ally, partner, and friend in the Middle East. But friends need to occasionally speak truth that may be unpleasant. We need to, at times, talk to our Israeli friends and convince them to take positions that can help close that gap between Israel and the United Nations. It's frankly not in U.S. interest to have that kind of division between our strongest ally, partner, and friend in the region, and that is Israel, and the rest of the world. So what we ought to be thinking about is how do we close that gap? Tactically saying things like, we're going to take names, is probably not the way to do that in a body like the United Nations.
Let's go to a call. Colin is calling from Iowa City, Iowa. You're on the air.
Hi. I just want to make a point that it seems like our president has made it hard for his administration and his cabinet to do their jobs. And in terms of Nikki Haley's comments on the United States being more respected as she leaves her post, it seems that her...
Colin, I'm going to have to jump in on you here because your cell phone is it's breaking up on us. It's a bit challenging to understand. But James DeVries, I know we've got to let you go here. So I think what Colin was getting to is that he looks at the president himself as making it making it more challenging for members of the cabinet to do their job because of the president's position and language on multiple issues on foreign policy. And this is something certainly that the next UN ambassador may face.
Absolutely. And, you know, Exhibit A would be the president's speech in front of the entire world, the UN General Assembly, mm-hmm. where he says, I've accomplished more in my 2 years than any American administration in history, and is roundly laughed at. That is not helpful when we go forth, and that, to me, is not a sign of respect. I think that our allies, partners, and friends are concerned because of our erratic behavior in our policy, and a good example would be NATO. During the campaign, President Trump said it was obsolete, we're going to get rid of it. Then he went over and was in a series of conversations that were not particularly productive. But at the end of it, he did say, yes, I support NATO. I support Article 5, an attack on one is an attack on all. But then subsequently, he went back to really excoriating the allies for spending. And we ought to put pressure on them. They ought to increase their defense spending. But at the same time, he praises people like Vladimir Putin. That is confusing and erratic when coupled with bombastic statements like he deployed in front of the General Assembly. That does not do us well in our position in the world.
Yeah, and he's going to name the next UN ambassador. So I just wonder, I mean, last question to you, James DeVries, has Nikki Haley actually sort of provided a model of, we were talking about this earlier in the show, of how to both serve the president and this particular administration, but operate in the UN in a way that doesn't let him or herself be defined by it, by the president?
Absolutely correct. And the problem is going to be that there will be countervailing forces who will look at Nikki Haley's performance and say, that's really not what we want. We want someone who's more under control, who reads the talking points from the White House more closely, is constantly in lockstep. And that'll be the tension. In fantasy land, Meghna, we would put a senior U.S. diplomat in that position, someone like Ambassador Ann Patterson, who's a four-time U.S. ambassador, on the model of a John Negroponte, for example, Ambassador Negroponte. We've had real diplomats in that role over the years, and they've been extremely effective. The best we can hope for is somebody like Nikki Haley, who at least will evaluate positions and try and effectively be a kind of a guardrail around some of the worst impulses. I fear that's not where this is going to go next.
Well, Admiral James DeVries is former Supreme Allied Commander for NATO. He was in that post from 2009 to 2013. Also Dean Emeritus at the Fletcher School at Tufts University, now with the Carlyle Group, and author of The Leader's Bookshelf. Admiral DeVries, it's always a pleasure to talk with you. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Meghna. Thanks, Colin. Good to hear your voice as well. Thanks, everybody.
Thank
Bye-bye.
You.
Colin, I'm going to come back to you here in just a second, but let's get another caller. Julia is calling from Annapolis, Maryland. You're on the air, Julia.
Hi. I just want to take issue with most of what has been said. I hear it as very anti-Trump and very much anti this government, without much understanding of what the president and his administration is doing. I don't see the administration as being anti-NATO or anti-ally. I think that the president, as a businessman, looks at a lot of things from a financial perspective, as he should, in terms of the American economy and what the Americans have to pay for. And so I think that he presents a lot of respect had been lacking, and in all fairness, we've, as a country, been taken advantage of by a lot of what we have been calling our allies, because we've been paying for everything, and they've been very happy to have us pay for it. And now that we're asking them to pay their fair share, they're speaking up. So I don't see it as America going against our allies. I think it's, for once, America standing up for us as the taxpayers, and asking everybody to pitch in fairly. And then we'll all be friends and everybody will be nice to each other. But at this point, I see the history of us as being taken advantage of under this president. And I think it's over. And under Nikki Haley, I think she's doing exactly what the president wants her to do. Perhaps he can't always say everything himself as it relates to Russia or other countries, But I don't think
why not? Why wouldn't he be able to say those things?
Because there's a lot of negotiation that goes on. I don't think diplomacy is defined only one way.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that he knows exactly who he's dealing with Vladimir Putin, just like he is with the North Korean leader and some of our so-called enemies. I think he probably has the idea of keep your friends close and enemies closer.
Well,
I think a lot of people who criticize him are completely missing the point.
Julia, thank you so much for your call. Colm Lynch, so Julia just presented us with a lot to think about there, but let's take it sort of one by one here. First of all, she seems to, she was looking at a sort of a very transactional nature to America's alliances and to diplomacy in terms of just this year, like money. We've heard a lot about NATO member countries not, quote unquote, paying their fair share here. Your response to that?
Well, I mean, first I'd say on the issues of the sort of relationship with allies, I mean, if you look at sort of the list of issues, Paris Agreement, Iran Agreement, positions on Israel, Palestine, I mean, clearly this and also the U.S. withdrawal from the Human Rights Council, from the International Organization on Migration, these are all institutions that, you know, the U.S. had played an important role in establishing, and these are institutions that are extremely important to our allies. And I think that we have not shown a lot of sort of understanding for the European positions on some of these issues. And we have, you know, essentially, you know, I just don't see how this could be seen as something that's showing sort of respect for the allies. You know, if you look at a situation like North Korea, I think that is an area where, you know, the president got a lot of criticism in the beginning for being kind of belligerent and threatening the possibility of war with North Korea. That has turned out, at least on the short term, much better for, you know, the prospects of diplomacy. I mean, the South Koreans speak highly of what the president has done. The Japanese speak highly of what the president has done a lot. But on those issues of North Korea, but there's not a lot of support for our issues on climate, on Iran, and on Israel-Palestine.
So you heard how the caller Julia said, you know, she used the phrase so-called allies and so-called enemies, and that the president keeps friends close but enemies even closer, and she approves of that. I mean, is that what you're seeing here, and how does that sort of play out in terms of, you know, the U.S.'s position on the Security Council and what it can and can't accomplish in the U.N.?
Well, I mean, the two different things. I mean, it's not necessarily bad that the president is trying to establish close working relations with Putin and with President Xi in China. You would want, you know, you would hope that that would produce some results. I mean, there has been considerable tension between the U.S. and China over trade. But if you get, you know, to the relationship at the UN, the relationship between the president and President Putin has had little spillover effect. I mean, the relationship has been very difficult. There's been very little agreement, extreme sort of standoffs over Syria, over the use of chemical weapons, over a whole variety of issues where you see the U.S. and Russia increasingly, you know, battling it out over issues that, you know, they might have been on agreement a couple of years ago. The relationship with China is not quite as confrontational, but on the UN front, but it certainly is on the issue of trade.
Well, Colm Lynch, UN-based senior diplomatic reporter at Foreign Policy, and we've got his latest story titled "Nikki Haley Stuns Washington by Announcing Resignation from UN Post." That link is at onpointradio.org. Colm, thank you so very much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. Really appreciate it.
And by the way, if you go to onpointradio.org, you can find a means by which to subscribe to our newsletter there as well. I really encourage you to do that. And while I've got a second, let me just tell you about the great people who helped produce On Point. It is produced by Anna Bauman, Brian Hardzinski, Eileen Amada, Stefano Katsonis, Allison Poli, Tanya Rally, James Ross, Alex Schroeder, and Miriam Wasser, with help from Lexi Peary and Madeline D'Angelo. Our executive producer is Karen Schiffman. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.